Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we believe that teenagers are not a problem to be solved, but we are here to help you equip teenagers through the power of connection. Hey guys, this is Chris Roby, and over across from me is Carly Duke.
Hello.
So Carly, we are doing our revisiting series during this brief holiday break as we take some time with our families, and we are pulling some really incredible episodes from this run of the Teen Life Podcast. To kind of bump up in our feed, so to speak, and to revisit, because we thought they were really incredible episodes. And the one that we're looking at today is an interview that I did back in May of 2021 with Dr. Michelle Borba. This interview was part of it's kind of an online symposium the Teen Life did back in that spring, where we were still all kind of home with the pandemic and wanted to be able to provide some really great content for our stakeholders and viewers. And we also released that interview as just an audio only podcast back then. But we thought this was a great episode for us to bring up during this brief holiday break. Dr. Michelle Borba is an educational psychologist, a best-selling author, and a Today Show contributor. And she has spoken to over 1 million participants on 5 continents and the countless media about child development issues. So the interview really surrounded her new book, Thrivers, which I believe as of this recording is still her most recent publication, but it was such a great book. I'm sure it's something that's going to endure for a really long time.
It really was incredible. So if you get a chance to read the book, I encourage you to do that. But this interview, she does a great job of breaking it down kind of into bite-sized pieces. But the book is all about how resilience is teachable. And she also gives her thoughts on what we can do to turn our kids into thrivers. So this interview that Chris did with Michelle is great. It's full of practical tips. It is a little longer than our normal episodes, but it's worth it. And you might even want to like listen when you have a chance to take notes, because she's going to walk through each of her 7 traits that are found in her book. And it's just a really good reminder. There's a reason I thought that this would be a good episode for our first episode of the new year. And when I went back and listened, I was like, man, I forgot how good this was. I've listened to this episode probably 3 times, but I was like, man, it's just really good reminders, whether you have teenagers or young kids, or you're a teacher, just the idea that our kids are resilient, but we can help teach them to be more resilient. And that's not just something that some kids have and some kids don't, but we can help them develop the skills to get there. So I encourage you to listen. I also encourage you maybe come up with 3 traits that you want to focus on this year with your teenager. And maybe that would be a great way to start this new year off. But enjoy this interview with Chris and Dr. Michelle Borba.
Because you are listening to this podcast, we can assume a couple of things. One, that you have great taste. And 2, that you care about teenagers. That is why we are so excited to introduce you to our sponsor, Lubbock Christian University. Whether you or your teen are interested in furthering your education in youth ministry, LCU is the perfect place to start. Contact our friend David Fraze to find out more about LCU and life in ministry to young people at david.fraze@lcu.edu. And don't forget, go Chaps!
Well, Dr. Borba, welcome to the podcast. We are so thrilled to have you on today. We at Teen Life have been really kind of geeking out about your book around our office the last couple of weeks, and it's been so much fun to read and to really see how things align with your work. And so, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. We are definitely in sync with each other. So, thank you.
Absolutely. So we want to talk about your new book, Thrivers, and the impact that's having. Could you talk a little bit about why did you write the book and why right now?
Why right now? It was actually, I didn't realize it was going to be so unfortunately critical for right now. I started writing it. Actually, it's been 40 years of writing it to try to figure out why some kids struggle and others shine. What is the science of resilience that says, here's things that we can teach kids to help them bounce back from adversity and reduce the mental health. Then I realized there was a real need. And that was 1 in 5 American kids was going to suffer from a mental health disorder.
Wow.
Then came the pandemic. So whatever happens in a crisis only amplifies the pre-existing issues. I found the answers, though. I realized resilience is teachable. There are 7 strengths that seem to make it up above all else, according to some phenomenal bits of longitudinal research of kids who overcame extraordinary adversity, from, you know, sexual abuse to poverty to war zone areas to schizophrenic parents. And when the scientists looked at them, they said that there were a few things that they had been taught along the way, other than having a caring champion adult who refused to give up on them. You put those protective factors with a caring adult and you've got a child who's more likely to shine.
Well, you kind of start the book talking about going from strivers to thrivers, right? And yeah. So talk about the difference between a striver and a thriver.
Well, first of all, every one of us wants a kid who thrives, because a thriver is a kid who's really got an internal driven sense of confidence that says, I got this. They also have the skills along the way. So when adversity hits, and every kid is going to be faced with some kind of a challenge, they're not going to give up. They're going to find, I got a way through this or around this or over it. And that's because they've learned the skills. A striver is a little different. They're well-loved. They're maybe extremely educated. But along the way, when the adversity hits, they don't go the whole nine yards. Very often they quit, they give up, they fall short. I'm talking about the grade, but also the life challenge. And as a result, they're not going to be their personal best. And very often, those are also the kids who suffer from the mental health disorder, because that failure really is going to impact them along the way.
Absolutely. And you spend a bulk of your book walking through us, and the subtitle is 7 Teachable Skills That Set Happy, Healthy, and High-Performing Kids Apart. And I want to go through those with you today, because as I'm reading this, obviously, you know, you take some of this to heart, even personally, like as an adult, I'm like, I got some work to do. But just to impart these skills onto kids is so powerful. And you talked about the research that you put into this, but what really stood out to me was not only that, but just the practical aspects of this book.
Oh,
there's so much
you
can take away from this as a parent or a helper. So I'm really excited to get into this with you in the podcast. So the 7 areas that we'll cover are a thriver has self-confidence, displays empathy, has self-control, integrity, curiosity, perseverance, and optimism. 7 incredible traits of a thriver. So let's walk through these point by point. So if you would kind of define, what does self-confidence look like in a thriver?
A self-confidence is a child who really focuses on who. They know who they are. It's that strong understanding of self. Now, they recognize that they've got some weaknesses, but they can accept them. They're more likely to focus on the who part. What are my strengths? What are my learning styles? What are my interests? What are my talents? It's that who. And what we found is that most of our kids are being raised by what? What you get? What do I want you to be? What are you going to? What's the school? And what kids told me is that when I interviewed them, is that most of them said they felt empty. They said, we're really well loved. We got great opportunities, but we don't have that sense of purpose and passion. That confidence is critical to mental health, because we now know that who helps you find your purpose and find meaning in your life. And I'm not saying you're going to win the Nobel Prize or you're going to win the Olympic gold medal, but one of the most interesting things about thrivers is they do ordinary things that make extraordinary differences in their lives. For instance, confident kids usually have hobbies. Simple little things. It could be they draw, they doodle, they write, they do woodworking. And when push comes to shove, they go to that hobby to decompress. Now, the fascinating thing, when I asked a group of middle school kids, what are your hobbies? They looked at me dumbfounded. What's a hobby and who's got time for hobbies? So maybe here's our moment, because it doesn't mean that they're going to shine and win the award for it. But think about ourselves. One of the things that's curtailing many of us and why we're so burned out is that we're not able to get to the things that help support us that we used to be able to do. And as a result, there goes the stress and there goes the burnout. So maybe first little step along the way is, take an index card, walk around the house and figure out who your kid is. What do they get excited about? What are they more eager to do? When they're going, Mom, I can't do the chocolate cake right now because I got to finish this project. And it's not because of the grade. It's because they love to do it. They're more eager about it. They learn that faster, whatever it is. It actually puts them in a flow state. which means you're far more likely to enjoy life and have a sense of purpose when you're engaged in that interest. Find out what your kid starts to gravitate toward. That could be a goldmine.
So talk a little bit about flow for a second, because I'm always curious. I've read about it, and the concept is fascinating to me.
It's University of Chicago, and they actually started tracking kids that were pretty darn talented kids. By the way, the average most talented kid in the United States gives up their talent around the age of 13, they also discovered, because they don't have time to practice the talent. But they were concerned as a group of researchers as to why SIDS, again, shine and others struggle. But they were looking at adults at this time. And what they discovered is that when we are engaged in things that really drive our passion, doesn't mean we're fascinatingly gifted at it, but things that give us a sense of purpose, we get into a state of flow, which we forget time. We forget what's going on. I got to finish this. I'm really into it. And it's going to be different for everybody. But the interesting thing is a goldmine for a parent or a teacher is to help them discover what's that passion. Many schools are now doing genius hours, which means it doesn't have to be every day, but it could be once a week or once a month. What's the one thing you want to learn more about? The one thing that fascinates you, and the kid gets to do a deeper dive into it, and it just excites the heck out of them.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, the person I was just interviewing yesterday said her kid at age 13 was so concerned about styrofoam, had no idea how bad the styrofoam was, and got so involved in, she can imagine styrofoam? She says he's now into environmental science, and that's what is still his interest is. And he just graduated in it. But it was one project at age 13. There was too much styrofoam in the garbage cans at the school.
Oh my goodness. That's incredible. So let's move on to empathy, which I know is a topic you've written extensively on your previous book on Selfie, what really covered building empathy in kids, this idea of we, not me. So let's talk a little bit about what is so important about empathy for a thriver.
Well, in terms of resilience, we do know now that resilient children have a sense of social competence, which does not mean that they're the most popular kid in the whole school, but it means that they've got a go-to of here's some people who can support me, or here's some people I can be with. And as a result, it actually increases your resilience. And we do know that that's probably one of the highest reasons why we're all tanking right now is because we've been physical distanced. So the people that give us the support of that interaction with particularly kids, teens, they desperately need other kids. Their lifelines have been cell phones now. So we're seeing a rise in anxiety, and that is why empathy is so critical. One of the simplest things that we can do to help our kids as they start re-entering school is practicing social skills. They're exercising their muscles of empathy. Say hello is one of the most highly correlated traits of well-liked kids. Wave if you can't. Use eye contact. Don't look down when you talk. Look up. Look at the color of the person's eyes, or at least the bridge of the person's nose, because confident kids look up, not down. That's a resilient child. And encourage the other kid. Say high five or good job or whatever. You can do that when you're playing chutes and ladders at age 4 with your kids. So simple little things like empathy. We do know also it is crucial as our world becomes more polarized, because it is probably the best antidote we have to hate. Empathetic kids are more likely to empathize, by the way, not necessarily with those like them. That's who you usually empathize with. My skin color, my race, my income. What we've got to do is bust our kids' bubble and expose them to differences so that me becomes we and them becomes us. And it has an incredible, incredible opportunity to reduce racism, hate, and bullying.
Well, it seems like technology really saps our ability to empathize.
Yep, it does.
Talk about how can we help a teenager become more empathetic, even by reducing their use of technology, or how does that look?
Well, it works by this reel, is that in order to empathize, the gateway to it is emotional literacy. You've got to be able to turn, look at the person and go, oh, she looks upset, or he sounds stressed, or look at daddy, he's looking really stressed out. That's the gateway. You can't feel with another person unless you can go, how would I feel if that happened to me? So the first thing is start talking feelings more naturally with your kids. We do a far better job with our daughters than we do with our sons starting at age 2. Make it natural. Not like, okay, it's 6 o'clock, let's talk feelings, but looks like you're stressed, looks like you're anxious. Me, I'm looking frustrated right now. When you're watching a movie, wow, he looks really irritated. So it's natural. Number 2 is, yeah, their lifeline is that cell phone, but you can also set some parameters because they are becoming addicted, says the research on it right now. Mm-hmm. And it's because they've spent a year and they're locked down and hungered with it. And that is when you are FaceTiming with grandma, do look at her face and look at and listen. How do you think she feels? When you notice that she starts to look a little tired, that's the time to say, let's talk later. So you can prime it as you're looking at it. Movies and books seem to be an extraordinary way to boost empathy if they're more literary fiction. That's why when we talk to kids, what's the number one book that in middle school that should always, always, always be something that's required reading? 50 years ago, The Outsiders continues to be what middle school kids said is one of the most necessary books. Why, I ask? Because it helps you learn what exclusion feels like and why we need to be included. Why are kids reading Wonder? It's literary fiction. You're stepping into the shoes of someone else. Harry Potter. Kids love Harry Potter. Find books that resonate with your kids, but don't stop helping your kids read. You can also, by the way, they're locked in the car. Put your cell phone down and let's listen to Harry Potter on the, just as you're going to grandma's house. The more they are exposed to particularly a deeper dive book, not 50 Shades of Grey, but you know, like Harry Potter or To Kill a Mockingbird or Grapes of Wrath. They also boost, by the way, adult empathy. They put us into MRIs and they've watched our brains, and right behind your ear where compassion is, it lights up when you're hearing passages from literary fiction.
Wow. Wow. So let's move on to self-control, which is, if you worked with kids very long, you know, this is a big issue. Being able to build self-control into a kid. So talk about, actually, I want to read a quick quote from your book from one of the students you interviewed. They said, "We're so stressed and burned out for a lot of reasons, but we're really a different generation and suffering from poor mental health and having trouble coping." Mm-hmm. Talk about that a little bit, that trouble of coping and what that has to do with self-control.
Well, there wasn't a kid across the U.S., and I interviewed 100 of them one-on-one for an hour, and there wasn't one kid who didn't say that. In fact, my first question was, I understand you're the most stressed out generation. There wasn't a kid who didn't deny it. But every kid also said, we do need coping strategies because we're all so stressed. But the problem is that stress keeps rising, and unless you can keep it at bay or, you know, think of it as a pressure cooker. Unless you can turn the pressure down, it goes into anxiety, depression, and suicidology. There's the problem. It just keeps rising. Now, let's go back to the kids and what do they need? They said, first of all, you got to give us a range of stuff because that mindfulness works for some kids. Meditation works for others. Koosh balls. You can't go walking around with them. Give us stuff that we can do in the here and now, not just stuff that works for you. And then said a kid from Greensboro that I loved, he said, and you got to practice it. You got to practice it until it becomes a habit. So the bottom line is our kids are stressed to the max and so are we. One of the easiest things that I ever learned in my life was working with Navy SEALs, and they're rewiring their brains based on retraining them. They said the first thing we do to keep arousal control down so we have cognitive strength, then we can get through some tough times, is we identify our stress signs. That's the first thing for a kid. Your body is giving you warning signs. So figure out, is it my hands are in a fist or they're getting sweaty or I'm doing rapid breathing or I'm grinding my teeth or all the above? Every kid's different. But maybe as a family, you can start start pointing out stress signs. Many teachers are helping kids just grid it, meaning just grid where you are. How high is the stress levels? Or on a scale of 0 to 7, when you go to an emergency room, they always ask how bad is the pain. 7 mm-hmm. is you're about ready to die out. You're in a volcano. 0 is you could be asleep. It's so low. So you could also do a signal in a classroom or at home. How bad is it for some kids that are so irritable? Then as soon as you know your stress signs, the second thing Navy SEALs say is they come up with a statement. Calm down or chill out. Or you're getting stressed, or you got it. One statement that they say and it helps them. Then they do slow deep breaths. They said it's a 1-2 deep breath that is the fastest way to relax. You take it deep from your abdomen. And the bottom line from it is you can do it any place at any time. That's what kids say they want. I don't want to have to carry around the app. I need to be able to do it any place, any time when I feel the stress mounting. If you take it deep from your abdomen, slowly, like you're riding up an elevator, and then hold it. Keep focusing on the breath and slowly let it out. So your exhale is twice as long as the inhale. You get the fastest relaxation process, and then you keep practicing it. So that's what kids are saying they need. Give me some stuff that I can keep the lid on before I get to meltdown.
Well, I know one other thing you mentioned is positive talk as well.
Yeah. And that's that thing that the Navy SEAL said were so critical. One reason for it is you're going to see in a minute, there's a multiplier effect. When you put any two of these strengths that we're talking about together, it multiplies or amplifies their power. So optimism is strength number 7. We'll get to it, but it works with self-control. If pessimism rises, which it is in our kids, and they see nothing but dismal stuff, and pessimism becomes permanent and pervasive, depression once again rises up. Stress rises up. So how do you keep the lid on it? Your thoughts impact your behavior, is what the new work says. Your thoughts impact how you're going to process the world. So again, what a Navy SEAL says is come up with a statement like, I got this. I'll get through it. It'll get better. Not all the above, but one. And then maybe as a family, you can come up with a family mantra. Or as a classroom, it's your classroom mantra. We got this. We're strong together. If you say it enough, what happens is, I know Navy SEAL says, I know it sounds touchy-feely, but it's powerful because it helps you get yourself aligned so that you can start to be in control. And that's your positive thinking.
Absolutely. So let's move on to trait number 4, which is integrity. It's a strong moral code that they stick with. And as I'm reading this, I'm thinking, you know, this is hard enough to convey to the kids, but adults, this is a problem.
It's a huge problem because character and moral integrity is going down. And when you look at the why, when you read Thrivers, the beginning of each chapter will give you the 3 big reasons there's a change in the culture and the science-backed reasons for it. Okay, we tell the kids to have a moral integrity and a strong code, and they've just gone through, you know, varsity blues of watching parents behave very, very badly, of paying their kids' ways into college and getting away with it. Well, not now. They're all going to jail and getting huge fines for it. But the first thing is our values in the classroom, as well as our values in our homes, matter. Not that you've just said it once, but if you keep helping your child realize why it matters and keep talking about it or pointing out models of people who are models of integrity while you're reading a book, while you're pointing it out in the news, that wasn't integrity, but this was. Mm-hmm. Or here's what we stand for in this house. The best idea was a kid named Mia Dunn in that chapter. Oh my God, she was a goldmine. All the Florida teachers said, go interview her and find out how she created that moral code. We've never had a kid with such a strong moral code. So I interviewed her and I said, how the heck did you turn out like this? Every teacher wants to know. And she laughed and she said, it was how I was raised. I said, okay, Mia, how the heck were you raised? She said, simple thing my dad did. Age 6, he said, everybody come into the family room. We sat here with my little brothers and there was chart paper all over the floor and marking pens. And there was my mom kneeling down and dad said, we're going to figure out what kind of family we are and what do we want to be remembered for.
Wow.
So start brainstorming. And any word counts. I mean, there's 400 virtues that have been adopted through time. You don't have time to teach all 400, but let's write them all down. So we did. There was kindness and caring and honesty and respect and responsibility. Pretty soon we ran out of room and dad said, okay, now let's choose one. And we chose, voted, all 5 of us selected honesty as the thing we wanted most. And he said, okay, we are now the honest duns. And I said, okay, that's pretty darn simple. How'd you remember it? She laughed and said it was impossible not to. My mother must have said it 50 times a day. She dropped us off at school. Remember, we're the honest duns. When we did something wrong, we're an honest dun. Was that an honest dun? We'd read a book and she'd go, they're honest duns. They said it so much, we became it. So I think that's the piece we may be the simple little thing. And that's what I want to do in Thrivers to show you. There's simple little science-backed ways, but if you keep repeating it, that's one of the simplest ways to help your kid develop a moral code.
It's a lot about identity. The identity of the family. We are honest. We are the honest duns. I love that idea. So we're going to move on to curiosity, and we here at Teen Life, this one really gets us going because we want the people who work with our students to be curious listeners. And we think about the idea of building curiosity in teenagers, and you give a kid space to be creative, amazing things happen.
And it absolutely dovetails with all of the science. Number one is, unfortunately, well, our kids age two are the most creative on earth. Anything is a curious thing. Give them a leaf and my gosh, the world is wonderful. Look up at a cloud and they could go on for days. But we've also looked at, by the age of five, American kids' creativity is starting to go down. How does that have to do with thriving? A lot. Because we do know that when a child is faced with a problem, which they will be, a curious kid is open. More open to people, more open to ideas, more open to what else could I do instead? So they don't quit and become the striver. They keep on going and find a way over it, around it, or through it by brainstorming or problem solving because they're open to possibilities and they go over and around and get through the challenge. That is the key piece to helping our kid thrive, is that they will face enormous obstacles, but we've got to help them realize there's no problem so great that can't be solved. It's inside your brain. Let's just storm it. What robs them? We have, first of all, helicoptering them, rescuing them, and say, here's what you should do next time. Not giving them what you just said, the open-ended possibilities to realize, wow, the stuff we could do with just a broom and a shoe and make up our own game. Give them those things. They become deeper thinkers. They become more joyous to life. And they become what actually we need them above all else to be able to do is realize, don't get stymied by that problem. Find a way around it and over it and through it with an open mind.
And it strikes me that failure is a big part of that.
Failure is a huge part of it. And the reason for it is we've made failure. Our children are so paralyzed by failure. And if we look at the best top inventors, I was at the MIT Multimedia Lab. Every chapter in Thrivers starts with a story of a place that I went to that was mind-boggling, that I didn't realize was going to be so mind-boggling. Best creative brains in the world are at MIT Multimedia Lab. It's where Siri is invented, artificial intelligence is invented. Name something, it's there. But the first thing when I looked at how the heck are these people inventing such extraordinary things, the director said, well, failure is an option here. The first thing is they've got to realize it's okay to make a mistake, because unless you make a mistake, you'll never be able to figure out what I'm going to do next time. And maybe that's the first thing, is we've got to make mistakes permissible in our homes, as long as you say, so, okay, what's your stumbler? How are you going to turn that into an opportunity? What will you do next time instead of being overwhelmed and quit? Thrivers find a way around the mistake and they realize it's okay. We just got to find an open-endedness possibility to keep it going.
That's incredible. So let's get to our last two traits of a thriver. Number six is perseverance. There's a quote that I pull from this chapter from one of the kids that you interviewed. It says, learning you can figure out things on your own is how you learn perseverance and confidence. A big problem in our generation is that everyone wants to do things for us.
It's a fascinating. You know what I loved about kids? All you have to do is ask them and they open up and they are so honest if you allow them to have voice. Yes. Another kid said the same thing. He's just earned a college degree into Yale. I said, well, what are you worried about? Because he looked a little stressed. He says, well, I'm worried I'm going to flunk life. I said, why? He said, so I don't even know how to do my checkbook. I don't know how to start the microwave. Everything's been done for me. Now, how does that have to do with thriving? Thrivers, there's a commonality that we now know, according to the science, is that they have agency, or they have a sense of, I can do this. Not that somebody else is going to rescue it and do it for me. Now, I'm not saying at age three, you're going to give them the car keys and say, what do you think your allowance should be? It's always age appropriate. But along the way, there's a parent who starts stepping back and saying, you got this. And I don't think we've done that nearly enough with our children. So it kind of robs them. Maybe is a realizing that it's all of life is a constant skills. And maybe each week is to say, what's the one skill my kid this week's needs to be in order to figure out how to handle life on his own? From making the bed at an early age, you always show the skill. Then you do it together so that you can make sure that you're helping your child learn how to do it. Then you step back and you watch for a minute, show me, and you can still give them feedback. No, it's almost there, but here's what to do instead, until finally you say, you got it, you're on it, and you don't do it anymore for the kid. Never do for your kid what your kid can do for yourself. There you go. There's your bottom line.
That is awesome. We love that. So our last one we're going to go through here before we wrap up is optimism. A thriver is optimistic. They find the silver lining. So would you define optimism for us?
Yeah, it's a kid who just has openness to possibilities. So when the doom and gloom hits, they still say, it's okay. I can got it. I know they have a reality base. They're not Pollyannas. They do know that this has been a dismal time in life. But the most important thing about an optimist that we now know is that they're able to make sure that that pessimism doesn't erode their hope for life. Once pessimism becomes permanent and not temporary, because we're all going to have a bad day. I mean, and rightly so, this has been a bad year. But if we keep saying this is just a doom and gloom or we're never going to get through it, after a while, we believe it. How are you going to counter it? You know, the interesting thing, Chris, is that there are schools now across the country. First of all, the number one time our kids are most likely to drop out of school, end of freshman year for a semester of college.
Okay.
They get there and then they don't have the skills to cope. And they said it's not their GPA. They're the smartest generation they've ever seen. But they don't have those coping skills and they give up because of the pessimism. And that pessimism, if it keeps going, goes straight into anxiety and depression. Your thoughts control your behavior. So what that thriving chapter is going to do is look at simple little ways to control the thought. So it helps the kids see, be open to, it's okay, it's bad right now, but we're going to keep going through it.
I mean, you go so far as to say to challenge inaccurate pessimistic thought, actually challenge that as it comes to your head. That seems really challenging to me for
it is challenging, but it's actually what called cognitive behavior therapy. That's the leading kind of therapy we now have that's helping rid depression, and they're doing it with teens, and it's phenomenal. The first thing is, and I guess the preface and the footnote to this is, don't assume that you're going to be able to teach your kid anything that we've talking about today in the next hour.
Right.
This is a journey as a parent, a journey as a teacher, and any skill needs, as we know, repetition, practice, 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 practice. So the first thing is helping the kid catch the worry. It's called worry catching. Just start tuning into your thoughts and realizing. Most of the teens admit it. They say, we catastrophize everything. All I do is think of the worst thing possible. They already know that they're doing it. So the first step is start catching. If you're going to call it catastrophizing, that's their word, then catch it. For a little kid, make it be a worry shrinker. Catch your bad worry. Are you saying it? In fact, if you hear the kid saying it out loud, you can come up with a signal. And that is touching your ear or touching your nose and saying, that's a worry, catch it. The next thing is, what are you going to replace it with? And maybe that's what the Navy SEALs do. That's exactly what they do. Before they go into battle, they say, okay, I'm going to catch my worry. And because if I don't, it's going to be pervasive. Stop it. That's a shrinker. I'm realizing it. I got it. It'll be okay. Second is, you can also do something else. Our children have been watching a daily death count, the most horrific stuff on TV. They've been watching murders live, racism, and capital insurrections. After a while, it creates a mean world syndrome to a child. They go, what the heck should I bother about? The world is all going to, you know, hell and high water. And if you kept watching that news, you'd think it too. So one thing you may be able to do as a parent is start showing them the good news. It actually reduces the pessimism. The good news, by the way, is on the back page of the newspaper in a paragraph that's about an inch big. So find the good stuff and blow it up. If you can find stories about real kids that are doing wonderful things, many teachers start the day with a good news report. Here's a good thing that happened in the world, or at night. What a great thing right before your kid goes to bed, or around the dinner hour. Paste the good news stuff on index cards. Example. Always true stories. And if you can find real kids your kid's age, these are siblings and they're little guys. And they had a strength that was cello. They were worried about empathy. The neighbor down the street who was 78 and all by herself, she's lonely, mom. There's empathy. They know their strength is cello. Mom said, so what can you do? Well, let's bring our cellos and sit on our porch. We'll social distance, mom, and maybe we can do a little concert for her. So they brought their cellos, dragged them down the street to the neighbor's porch, knocked on her door. She came and sat way before out to the other side. They did their little cello concerts. Mom videoed it. The neighbor cried. The kids cried. We're so happy, mom. But mom put it on Facebook and then it went viral. And what happened was extraordinary. Because kids all over the U.S. said, I can do that. And now you're seeing ukulele concerts in Sacramento, tuba concerts in New York. All because kids were inspired to go, I can do that. And I think that's what we need to do. You want an optimistic kid, you inspire them to know you can. Find what you're good at. You like to draw instead, you're not so good at cello? Then get your sidewalk chalk and go out in the street and start putting some good comments out there so neighbors start reading them. You can make people happy. By the way, that's the best ways to boost optimism and reduce stress, is doing and giving back, not getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dr. Borba, I just cannot thank you enough for the time you spent with us today walking through this incredible book. I can't highly recommend it to our listeners. I really hope that our listeners will take advantage of this and really take to heart all the work you put into this, and we really appreciate it.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you. Bottom line of this, thrivers are made, not born. We've got work to do, and we can.